Reading the book of Revelation is like trying to decipher a complicated code. During COVID, one of the things that I've enjoyed doing is studying a little bit more about the Second World War. And one of the most important military jobs in the war was that of a code breaker. For instance, think of May 1942, Honolulu, and a man by the name of Edwin Layton. He was a rear admiral in the United States Navy, and he was able to work with other experts to break the Japanese codes. These codes were to help prepare the Japanese to launch their attack on Midway on June the 4th, 1942. It was the Japanese intention that if they got Midway, they would be that much closer to Hawaii, which would in turn make them that much closer to the west coast of the continental United States. But along with those who worked with him, Edwin Layton was able to break the Japanese codes so that the Americans were ready for the Japanese when they came to Midway. And this was the most important Pacific maritime battle of the Second World War. And because of expert code breakers, the Japanese did not win that battle. Now, clearly, the Book of Revelation is a wartime document. For the devil wants us to know that he thinks he's gained control of this world and that he will defeat Jesus and his kingdom. And as it appeared to the Americans leading up to June the 4th, 1942, where the Japanese Air Force seemed invincible, there are times when the devil seems invincible as well. Think of John, the writer of the Revelation. All of his closest friends, including his brother James, have been martyred for their Christian faith. John is now over the age of 80. He's on a Mediterranean island called Patmos, where he is having to do hard labor, working in the stone quarries of the strongest, the most powerful empire that the world had ever known, the Roman Empire. And indeed, the stone in this quarry would be used to build the great Roman buildings and monuments. How would you feel if you were John, all of your closest friends dead, on this island of Patmos, working as an 80-year-old with a hammer, breaking up stone? Well, the remarkable thing is John looks into heaven and he sees that there is indeed hope because he's able to decipher the code of Revelation chapter 5. And so I want to think with you now for a few minutes about this remarkable chapter. And it begins with these words: "Then I saw in the right hand of the one seated on the throne a scroll written on the inside and on the back, sealed with seven seals." And for people who are biblically aware, this brings to mind the Ten Commandments, written on the front and on back, written everywhere. And we're told that this seal, or this scroll rather, excuse me, has seven seals. We're also told that the scroll is in the right hand of the Ancient of Days. This is God the Father. And because the scroll is in his right hand, this represents his authority. And then John describes what happens next. "I saw a mighty angel." Stop there for a minute. Angels are not cute little cherubs on Hallmark cards. Angels are remarkable. Angels have great power and great authority, and here they are described as being mighty. And this angel, this mighty angel, we're told, is proclaiming with a loud voice, "Who is worthy to open the scroll and break its seals?" And no one in heaven or on earth or under the earth was able to open the scroll and to look into it. Now, seven is the number of completion. It's the number of perfection. And in the book of Revelation, the number seven comes over and over and over again. And as the angel says, no one is able to break open the seal, you can understand John on the island of Patmos, feeling alone, says the following: "And I began to weep bitterly, because no one was found worthy to open the scroll or look into it." And then one of the elders, remember the 24 elders, that they represent the fullness of the people of God? We heard about them yesterday. One of the 24 elders says, "Do not weep. See, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, has conquered so that he can open the scroll and its seals." Why did John grieve? Because he had a false assumption. He assumed that there was no codebreaker. No one who could make sense of it all. No one who could make sense of history. But then appears the lamb, or the lion, excuse me, of the tribe of Judah. And this is code for the great Davidic king, who alone can open the scroll and its seven seals. For you see, what does this mean? That Jesus Christ alone is the one who can interpret all of biblical history. That's what the scroll represents, the whole of the Bible. And apart from Jesus, the Old Testament does not make sense, or it doesn't make complete sense. And here John sees and understands that Jesus, the one who has the ability to interpret the Bible, is then depicted not as a lion, but a lamb. A lamb that was slain. Do you know in the book of Revelation that this image of the lamb is used 29 times? We've got the lion once, and the rest of the revelation is the lamb. But this is no ordinary little sheep. If you've ever been into my office, this is not Agnes. No, this lamb, we're told, has seven horns. This lamb has seven eyes. In the Bible, a horn is representative of authority. That the lamb has seven horns means that he has complete authority. That he has seven eyes means that he is all-seeing, he is all-knowing. And here's the wonderful thing that John discovers. Because this lamb who has the seven horns and the eyes, he is the one who is able to make sense of it all. And here is the point of the code. In the rest of that passage that we heard read today, we have the worship of heaven, we have the lamb, and we have the 24 elders, the four creatures, and all the saints worshiping before the lamb. Indeed, in Revelation chapter 5, what do we have? The heavenly mass. And whenever we gather for mass, we are living out Revelation chapter 5. This is the breaking of the code. For what happens at every mass? Well, the first part of the mass is an opening of the scroll, excuse me. It is the unpacking of biblical history. And having done that, we then move in to the Eucharist. And what happens at the Eucharist? You'll notice this today in the Mass. Repeatedly, after Jesus is Eucharistically present on the altar, what will the priest say? Lamb of God, Lamb of God, Lamb of God. We are in a war. It's real. But on Good Friday, a battle more decisive than Midway was fought and won. But the war is not over yet. And if we are going to live in this world with a perspective that is hopeful, if we are going to live in this world with a perspective that is meaningful, you and I need the Mass. Because in the Mass, we are able to make sense of it all. May we be encouraged to celebrate the gift of our Eucharistic Lord, who so humbles himself that he willingly comes to us in Eucharistic bread and Eucharistic wine. And we join with people of every tribe, language, nation, worshiping by faith, hope, and love the Lamb that one day we will see. And so, my beloved friends, may St. John the Evangelist encourage you and me. May we thank God for the Mass. So here we can live and engage in the battle until that day when ultimate victory is won. When, in the words of Revelation 21, there is a new heaven and a new earth, and we will know final victory.